Welcome into the first episode of the fourth season of the Sabermetrics podcast hosted by the Charging Buffalo. My name is Bill. Alongside me, as always, is Walt. Walt, how you doing, man?
Doing pretty good. I mean, it's hard to believe we're already on our fourth season of the show. It feels like we just started it yesterday.
Yeah, time flies when you're having a lot of fun, and I obviously appreciate everyone listening, and appreciate Walt hopping on for all these episodes. It's been a lot of fun. Looking forward to having a lot more, and hopefully having a podcast where the Sabres are actually like in the playoffs, or like something's cool is happening at the end of the season. So I'm looking forward to that. But first, this offseason, starting with the NHL draft, I'm gonna let Walt take this one away. Excuse me. But all I will say is, it's kind of like the same thing as Dylan Cousins. Didn't expect Zach Benson to fall to the Sabres, but he did, and I'm super happy about it. So, Walt, besides that, what else can you tell us about the Sabres' most recent draft?
I mean, that Zach Benson pick, I mean, he was a guy that was like fifth, sixth on my board. So the fact that the Sabres were able to grab him at 13, I feel like it's just incredible. He's just such a talented hockey player. I mean, Sabres have experience with him because they drafted Savoy, and Savoy obviously played on the same line as Zach Benson this past season. So Sabres got to watch a lot of Zach Benson. And he's really just an incredible hockey player. He's got just a fantastic hockey sense, great playmaker. He really fits into what the Sabres are trying to build. I think they could really use a playmaker in their system, especially with all the fantastic shooters they have. I think just adding Benson to your prospect pool at this stage of the rebuild, I think is just huge. I think there's a very real possibility in the future that Zach Benson could be the Sabres' best forward for a number of years. Obviously, that's a little bit further down the line, but I think it's definitely a possibility. That's just how high I think Zach Benson's ceiling is. He's just a fantastic hockey player. And then, you're just talking about the later rounds. Anton Wahlberg, their first pick in the second round, he's just a really interesting hockey player. Younger birthday in this past draft, so he's a guy that still has a lot of developmental runway left. He's a 6'3" forward, so he kind of brings a dimension that the Sabres don't really currently have in their prospect pool. And I think he's a guy you just want to let develop in the SHL for a little bit and kind of see where he goes from there. He looked pretty promising playing the SHL to close out this past season, so you really hope he could continue that on to the next season. And Maxim Sterbak, their other pick in the second round, he's a right-handed defenseman who didn't have a ton of production in the USHL, played on the same team that Ryan Johnson did when the Sabres drafted him. He's another defenseman who didn't have that much production on his USHL team. The thing with Sterbak, though, is he did have a ton of production playing for Slovakia in international tournaments, especially at the U18 level, so there may be a little bit more offense there to be unlocked with him. So he's an interesting piece. I think the Sabres don't really need anything too fancy on the right-hand side. So I think Sterbak really fits an area of need for the Sabres. And then with their later picks, I mean, they took the local guy, Gavin McCarthy from Clarence, right-handed defenseman also from the USHL, and Ethan Medema, their OHL pick in the fourth round. He was a guy that was considered one of the top prospects in the OHL back when he was drafted into that league. So he's another bigger forward, some power forward potential. So overall, I think they had a pretty fun draft. Obviously, that Benson pick I just love, so I may be a little bit biased in that regard. But just drafting Zach Benson with that first-round pick, everything else is a win for me after that.
All right, and my personal favorite is Norwin Pancha? Pinoka, I guess. Yeah, that would make sense. Played for the Berlin Polar Bears in the German Juniors. He was a seventh-round pick for the Sabres, so a little shout-out to him for that. But, I would agree. I think a lot of people were kind of saying, look, you don't necessarily draft by positional need, but we do need some right-handed defensemen in the pipeline. It looks like they grabbed a few. And the Sabres are really at a luxury point where they can kind of let these guys ride out, especially, you know, first round picks are a little bit different. People are a little bit more anxious on them. But other than that, I think these guys have a lot of runway to just develop and, you know, kind of craft their own future, I guess you'd say, within their respective, you know, juniors or professional leagues, especially overseas. And I think there's something to be said for that instead of constantly saying each year, like, well, when can these guys be, you know, see them in North America or see them on the Sabres, and people really trying to push, you know, we could see them maybe in a year or two or three max, something like that. For me, it's they have a lot more runway now just because it seems not every single draft is bringing in like top prospects now just because they are doing a little bit better in the standing. So you have to give them a little bit more runway. Do you kind of feel that way as well? Do you see any of these guys, you know, making a quicker jump than we expect? Just expectations for, you know, the first handful. I think everyone kind of knows once you get to like the third, fourth round, you really need to give them a while. But the first, let's say the first three picks, there was one in the first round, Zach Benson, then you had Wahlberg and Sturback. What do you kind of see as a projection, a realistic one, just to kind of throw that out there for people?
I mean, I guess the one thing is, like, Jay Fresh on Twitter this past week has been posting, like, kind of like those redrafts. And I think a lot of people, like, kind of underestimate how many, like, NHLers actually come out of these drafts. I mean, if you look at the 2016 draft, there's, like, maybe 30 full-time NHLers and like 15 guys who are on the fringe, and then like 15 who have played NHL games but are kind of out of the league at this point. I mean, the good drafts have probably about like 50 NHLers and 10 guys who are on the fringe. So the odds are that a lot of these guys will never be playing consistent games in a Sabres uniform in the later rounds. I do think Zach Benson, he's a prospect. When people are talking about how a guy like Matt Savoy, how they think he's NHL ready, I think if you think Savoy might be NHL ready, I feel like you definitely have to think that Zach Benson is NHL ready. Okay. Zach Benson's 16 months younger than Savoy, arguably a better defensive forward as well. A little bit taller too, but a little bit lighter, so the size difference isn't too big there. And Benson's maybe not as good of a skater, but I think his hockey IQ makes up for that. So I think if you're talking about a guy like Savoy being NHL ready, you got to be a person that thinks Benson is very close to being NHL ready as well. And I do think he probably doesn't make the Sabres roster this year. I do think he pushes very hard for a roster spot in training camp in 2024. And in fact, I think he'll actually crack the Sabres roster in that year. And, then a guy like Anton Wahlberg and Sturback, those are two guys you're just going to let develop for a few years. As Sturback's going to Michigan State. Mm-hmm. Wahlberg's getting pretty decent ice time in the SHL for a player his age, so you hope that continues. I think both guys are fine developing there for a few years, and then check in on them in a few years, and hopefully they turn into NHLers for the Sabres.
Yeah, especially with Wahlberg, to my understanding, he's obviously has a big frame, but he's a good skater for that frame too, and you just kind of hope that everything can kind of just come together. It would seem he would have the makeup build-wise and able to keep up speed-wise to maybe crack the bottom six, but again, years off from that, and it's good that, you know, he'll be able to play in the SHL and play against, you know, grown men in a professional league. And then even if you're playing at Michigan State, I mean, you're going to be playing some top players in college and a lot of older guys, a lot of upperclassmen, especially in that conference. So hopefully it's something where like the runway that's given to them, they take the most of it. I think, you know, with any prospect that the Sabres take, you obviously hope that they make the most of their opportunities and can continue to grow and maybe be those anomalies in certain drafts. You know, this sixth round pick made it, or, you know, kind of Victor Olofsson, you know, a seventh round pick, and takes a while, but he finally makes the NHL and he makes an impact when he's here. Now, not everyone has a shot of Victor Olofsson, but if players can find something to contribute, that's what we're looking for. So moving on from the draft to free agency. What would you say is a bigger signing for the Sabres? Because I'll just go over them. They re-signed Tyson Jost. They signed Eric Johnson, Connor Clifton, brought back Dustin Tokarski, brought in Devin Cooley, Justin Richards, both of those two guys I last mentioned. sound like Rochester guys. They also re-signed Cale Clegg, which is like their 700th defenseman that could probably play for the Sabres this upcoming season. So what do you think of those signings? And then there's a lot more to kind of question, especially on the defensive side. But what do you think of those signings? Which one was bigger between Eric Johnson and Connor Clifton? What do you think will have a bigger impact for the Sabres?
I think those signings were pretty good, especially if they're just trying to kind of fill up the depth on the right hand of that defense. I'm going to go with Clifton being the bigger signing just because his cap hit's like slightly bigger and he signed for a few more seasons. Eric Johnson, just a one-year deal. Clifton with a three-year deal. I do think Johnson, though, could have a pretty good impact this year just because he's been in the NHL for so long. Everywhere he's gone, it seems like his teammates just love him. I mean, he is a huge piece to that culture in Colorado that won a Stanley Cup. Just seems like a really fun teammate to have. Also teammates with Tyson Jost, too, back in Colorado. So I think Eric Johnson from a locker room standpoint is going to make a huge difference for this team. And it's going to be nice to kind of have a sturdy veteran defenseman on the back end. I guess they maybe had that last year with Lyubushkin, but I mean, he's only been in the NHL for so long. I think Johnson kind of brings a new dimension to that defensive group just in terms of veteran leadership. And then you got a guy like Connor Clifton too. And he's been in the NHL for a decent while as well. He's a smaller defenseman, but he loves to play physical. And I could definitely see this guy playing on the right side of either Dahlin or Power. I think he'll be pretty versatile in that regard, as he won't really have to do too much. So I think when we have the conversation about the Sabres needing to acquire top four defensemen, I think when you have Dahlin and Power on your first and second pair, I think the question of what qualifies a top four defenseman kind of changes a bit. Because, mm-hmm. I mean,
yep.
Just having to play with a good defenseman, I mean, a lot of guys could do. You could look at all the Norris finalists this year, the top 10 guys on that list, and look at their defensive partners, and you won't believe some of the names you see. I mean, they're not like all-star players. They're just guys that kind of mesh well with the other defensemen and just let the top defensemen do their thing. And I do think the Sabres may have gotten that with the signings this offseason. So, I like their offseason. I know people wanted the Sabres to do a bit more. There's still a lot of time left, but with what they've done so far, I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, I would say so too. It's more about the fit when it comes to defense partners for guys of that caliber of Dahlin and Power. It's more about the fit because the production and the flash and the flair and the, you know, everything you're looking for out of, you know, top defensemen. You know, you're going to get that from Dahlin. You're going to get that from Power. So it's about finding the guys that really mask any kind of deficiencies they have and obviously don't have any deficiencies that make it a problem for the defensive pairing. I know it's kind of a convoluted way of looking at it, but it's more about the fit. It's almost like if they're like, the best way to describe it is, you know, the partnership is more important than specifically what they can do individually on the ice. And that's kind of goes for obviously forward groups as well, even though I would say forwards are a little bit more interchangeable. Defensive partners, you're the last line of defense. And other than that, unless the goalie is going to bail you out, you're in trouble. So you need to be in line with each other. So I'm looking forward to seeing kind of where's Clifton going to line up and where's Johnson going to be? Where's Samuelson? Because it seemed like Samuelson Power was what we were looking for. Then does it go Clifton Power and then Johnson, Eric Johnson, that is, with whomever else? I mean, let's look at the Sabres that they have on the roster as of right now. Jacob Bryson, Cale Clegg, Connor Clifton, Rasmus Dahlin, Eric Johnson, Henry Jokiharju, Ilya Lyubushkin, Owen Power, Matthias Samuelson, and Riley Stillman. That is 10 defensemen for 6 spots, and you could put all those guys in the lineup. So my question to you is, now that they brought in Johnson and Clifton, those guys aren't getting moved. Dahlin, which, you know what, I'll just say it now. I was going to make its own little section here. Let's say hypothetically there was an extension for Rasmus Dahlin made, but they didn't want to announce it when he's touring France. So all the people I've seen people get a, you know, announce a Dalene extension. Look, I don't have any inside information, but I'm just going to throw it out there. I would have a pretty good feeling that it's already been agreed upon. And once he comes over to the States to start the season, everything like that, it gets announced. You know, what are you going to do? You're going to announce it at 8 a.m. on a Wednesday when he's in Nice? I don't think so. So that's where I'm at with the Dalene thing. Again, I don't have any inside information, but I'm just going to throw that out there, let people chew on that for a bit. For those 10 defensemen, Jacob Bryson, probably on his way out, you would assume. Cal Clegg, Tweener. That you have Labushkin and Yoki Haru. I'm assuming you're not signing Johnson and Clifton just to sit them. You also have, Ryan Johnson. There's 11 defensemen, which we expect Ryan Johnson to be down in Rochester for, you know, most of the year, if not all the year. But what do you do with guys like Yoki Haru, Labushkin, and Stillman? I mean, do you carry all those guys? Who do you see maybe getting traded out of here? Because that's a lot. I mean, there's something to be said for having, we have 8 defensemen in 6 spots. You know, 2 of those guys are really going to have to fight it out, and unfortunately, they're not going to make the lineup. Sabres have 10. You can almost make 2 teams of defensive pairings with how many guys that can technically play in the NHL to varying degrees of success. What do you think? Who do you think is the odd man out? I personally believe Bryson and Yoki Haru are, and Clegg, frankly, just because I think he's depth. But is there anyone else that you wanted to chat about possibly not being an everyday player or even being a Saber by the time the season starts?
Well, I mean, there's going to have to be at least 2 guys in those 10 names that won't be on the Sabres at the start of next season on their 23-man roster just to kind of evenly fill out those positions. And I think you look at a guy like Riley Stillman, he's a guy the Sabres like literally just acquired at this past trade deadline. So I have a very hard time seeing the Sabres moving on from him. And I thought he played some pretty fun hockey in his games for the Sabres down the stretch. He has posted some pretty good numbers, like analytics wise, and he played very aggressive. I mean, even got in that fight against Tampa where it knocked him out for a few games. But I mean, the guy has that competitive nature that you really want on the Sabres, and the coaching staff seems to like him. So I think he'll definitely stick around as a 6th-7th defenseman. And I'd say the same thing about Labushkin too. I mean, this current Sabres regime is the group that brought in Labushkin, so I have a hard time seeing them move on from him so quickly, and I think he's perfectly fine in that 6th-7th defenseman role. Then you come down to names like Yoki Haru and Bryson. I think that's where things start to get interesting a bit. Yoki Haru, he's a guy that you're probably going to trade before you place on waivers, so it's going to be interesting to see what they do there. Still a lot of time left in the offseason. First day of free agency was only 10 days ago. Draft was just a little over 2 weeks ago. So there's still a lot of time left to make moves, and they're going to have to at some point. And I think Yoki Haru is a guy who could potentially get traded just because he's not really one of the guys from the current regime. He was brought in by Jason Botchrill in that Alex Nylander trade in 2019. So he's a guy who I think could be on the outside looking in. And Bryson as well, didn't play many games down the stretch. Also a guy from a previous regime. I really don't see what his role is on the Sabres, especially after adding guys like Clifton, Johnson, and then you're bringing back guys like Stillman, Labushkin. I just don't really see a role for him. So my pick would probably be Bryson and Yoki Haru not being on the Sabres roster at the start of next season.
All right, 2 questions on that specifically. Jacob Bryson, do you put him on waivers to send him to Rochester, and do you think he clears? And second question, when it comes to Henry Yoki Haru, what is the trade that, you know, like the minimum for you to say, done deal, let me take it? Would it be a 3rd-round pick, 4th-round pick, 5th-round pick? Like, what is the lowest point? Like, you know, I draw the line at 6th-round pick. If anyone's not offering anything more than a 6th-round pick, we just keep them and maybe try to bury them or waive them. I know that's kind of that's a tough one to go with. I would probably say 5th-round pick for me which is, it's tough because, again, you go from drafting someone, what, top 10, and Alex Nylander, then you trade him away. And you already got, you got a better return on investment than you thought you would. Yoki Haru, regardless of what you think of him, has played a lot more NHL games than Alex Nylander. So where do you draw that line? Like, if it's a 6th-round pick, it's like, no, we'll just, you know, kind of stick it out. And then, like I said, with Bryson, if you do waive him, you know, what do you think? What do you think would happen there? Do you think someone would claim him? You think he would be going down to Rochester? Because I'm sure Rochester could use the help. Having someone like Jacob Bryson in Rochester, that's a good thing. Maybe not for Buffalo, but for Rochester to have a defenseman like that, that's not a bad thing at all. So what are your thoughts on those two things?
Well, I think Yoki Haru, I think the Sabres will pretty much have to take whatever is given to them if they do decide to move on from him, just because of how they really set themselves up with,
yeah, it's also true,
the amount of defensemen they have. Like, yeah, the players either have to be waived or traded. So at this point, I guess they'll take what you can get. Maybe, yeah, try to include him in a package for another piece. But the Sabres have a pretty well-rounded roster. So unless they're trading for like a 1B goalie, I don't really see many options where Yoki Haru included in a trade would make too much sense, but I guess we'll see. There's still time left in the offseason. And then a guy like Bryson, with his contract, I think he probably clears waivers. And I know the Sabres really don't like having to put guys they signed to NHL deals in Rochester. I feel like they always kind of feel bad, kind of like, we're the team that like convinced you to sign this deal and then we're sending you to the AHL. Yeah. And playing the AHL, I mean, that stinks for a guy that's been in the NHL for like, yeah, a decent amount of time like Bryson has. Like, that's a huge adjustment going from like airplanes to like South Beach in Los Angeles to like a bus ride to Utica and like moving back into a different city when he's already kind of established life in Buffalo. So I do think they're going to try to move Bryson if they do decide to move on from him. I mean, maybe if they even have to retain money too. I don't really think they'll do that, but I think they're going to push to trade him. But I just don't really know what his value is around the league. Maybe there's some team that could be interested in him, but with his cap hit at a pretty decent number, like over $1 million for what you're getting with him, I think that could be a hard sell to some team. So he may be a guy who could end up in Rochester next season.
$1.85 million for Jacob Bryson.
Yeah,
that's hefty.
A decent clip for, yeah, what you're getting with him.
Yeah, that is not, that's nothing to sneeze at there. So I don't know. I mean, the guys are going to weed themselves out, you know what I mean? Like, those questions will be answered because they need to be answered, and something's going to have to happen. And I would put my money on those two guys. It just kind of seems like they've kind of fallen out of favor, especially Bryson, but Yoki Haru even saw it too. I think we've all kind of agreed that he would be best in like a third pairing role with maybe someone that's probably better than him. I don't know. Maybe like in the future, if Yoki Haru were to stay around, maybe like a Ryan Johnson. Someone that can kind of like make up for Yoki Haru isn't the worst skater, but he's also not the best. So you have someone that's really good defensively and good at skating. Maybe, I don't know. I'm just trying to throw some stuff out there, but it kind of seems, yeah, like he's in on his way out, which is kind
of
a bummer.
I think with that, with his handiness, I think like just being a right-handed defenseman really helped him kind of like stick in this lineup for a while. But now, yeah, that we've seen Dahlin be able to play on the right side, and they bring in Johnson and Clifton, and they have Labushkin signed,
yeah,
I think that may be what pushes Yoki Haru out, is he really doesn't have that advantage,
no,
of being a right-handed shot anymore with the amount of depth the Sabres have brought in on the right-hand side.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point as well. And so let's keep an eye on Henry Yoki Haru for sure, because I definitely think, especially being a right-handed defenseman, if he does get kind of weeded out in training camp, maybe some team has an injury to a top six guy, and, you know, very much like the Jack Quinn situation, they won't be there for a while. And so a team's like, you know what, let's just take him on, go from there. So there's a lot that can happen. Like you said, it's only, what, 10 days after free agency opens, so there's a lot that can happen. We'll definitely see what goes on there, and if anything does happen trades-wise, stuff like that, obviously we will discuss it. I did want to get to a couple questions that we had from listeners, which, by the way, we're going to try to do a little bit more. I know that's not really been the norm on this podcast, but just for the sake of, you know, I like, the Sabres fans are just smart, dude. Like, they know what's going on, and like every question that we've ever gotten, we haven't done it much, but they're always like good questions. Not like,
oh,
do you
solid
like
knowledge.
Owen Power? And you're like, yeah, well, yeah. No, it's like, these are actually good questions. So the first one is from Dad Rock Enjoyer on Twitter, which is just, I love that.
Oh, hell
that's,
yeah.
That's fantastic. Big fan of that. Anyway, Kevin Adams has said multiple times that he plans to develop the roster from within. Yes, he has. For example, the players he has already seen get better, essentially. I'm kind of putting words into his mouth. But who do you guys expect to progress, regress, and who do you think would be about the same from last year? I'm going to talk about like younger guys. Any kind of regression? I don't see any young guys really regressing. Only regression I would see is like older players that have just kind of lost a step, which the Sabres don't really have a ton of. Maybe Eric Johnson and Opozo, you'll be able to say, kind of regress, quote unquote. But for me, before I hand this over to Walt, I would say progress-wise, my biggest one, I'm not going to go too in-depth on every player. My biggest one is JJ Paterka. And it's probably unnecessary pressure to put on him, but now that he's always been tied to the hip of Jack Quinn, but now Jack Quinn's hurt. And so, like, some of the spotlight that was going to be on Jack Quinn and his big sophomore season, how can he follow it up? Can he be a 30-goal scorer? Is now like, oh, crap, well, he's gone until at least December. And honestly, is he really going to look like himself until, like, I don't know, mid-January? Just kind of throwing it out there. I think there's going to be a lot more eyes on Paterka and seeing it being a little bit more under a microscope. Nothing crazy, but people are, you know, Jack Quinn's not here. There's plenty of other young players to kind of keep an eye on too, but I would keep an eye on JJ Paterka and see how he really progresses. It was a decent, you know, freshman campaign, I guess you could say, for him, but he definitely had a down like 30 game stretch in the middle of the season. It was pretty rough for him. He got sat a couple times too. So I really want to see the progression of him. The second person I will say who I expect to take a jump would be Peyton Krebs, just because he found his new role last season, and now he has his first like real season where like this is, he knows what to expect and he knows what he has to do instead of being a top six guy or a top option like he was in Winnipeg or even in Rochester. So I would keep my eyes on Peyton Krebs too. Obviously, I think guys like Devin Cousins can probably take another step. I would say he's more, I mean, guys like Tage Thompson, he can't get much better. I would say he's around the same. Dylan Cousins maybe takes a slight step there. Am I missing anyone really? I'm going to hand it over to you to mention anyone else, but I think those are some of the players that you can see take a step. I even think, last one I will say, I even think Jordan Greenway can take a step. It took both Jost and Greenway a while to kind of get out of their Minnesota habits, I guess you would say. And he looked pretty rough, and I just think he's a better player than some of the games that we saw him in, so I can see him taking a jump. I would say Casey Mittelstadt would probably be about the same, and I would say that's a successful season for him. So I know I keep saying like last name and then I add another, but that's pretty much where I'm at. That's a great question, just because it is been very apparent that, look, the help for the Sabres team is coming from within. We missed the playoffs by 1 point. We think the natural progression of these players and, you know, small additions around the edges here with Johnson and Clifton to help improve the defense, I think that's where you're looking for, you know, making it from just missing the playoffs to the playoffs is just a natural progression, like Kevin Adams has mentioned and we've all seen. So, Walt, hand it over to you. Who do you think you'll see make progress, stay stagnant, or maybe even regress?
I would say my pick for the player to make progress next season, yeah, I'd have to go with JJ Paterka. And this is really just based off his world championships. He was outstanding for Germany in that. He really showed like dimensions to his offensive game that we really haven't seen too much of yet at the NHL level. We've seen flashes of it, but he was showing it pretty consistently every game there, even though he's playing against some countries that you never really knew they even played hockey there, like France and
Bosnia.
Well, I shouldn't say France, because I guess that's disrespectful, like Bellemare and Cristobal Huey, but countries that don't have a lot of NHLers, he's putting up good numbers against. But I mean, hey, it's better than not putting up big numbers against those countries. And
that's fair.
He's named a player of the tournament there, which is pretty remarkable for a player his age. I think he's a guy who, if he takes that next step defensively, which I think he can, because he has just a relentless motor, I think he just gets caught kind of like cherry picking for pucks at time and then really trying to exit the defensive zone quickly. I mean, that whole line has. That's why they're one of the better rushing lines in the league with Cousins, Quinn, and Peterka. But I think his role, like you said, with Quinn being out, it's probably going to change a little bit. I think he'll probably have to show a bit more defensive responsibility. And with that growth in his offensive game combined with probably an increased defensive responsibility from him, I think you could get a very interesting player. And I think he's going to be a key guy for the Sabres for years to come. And I'm just very excited to see what he can do next year. And then we go to the player that I think can regress. I guess the betting man's answer here would be Casey Mittelstadt, just with the way he ended last season. If you're thinking he'll regress from that point, I think that's a pretty easy thing to say just because he had 19 points in his final 14 games. So if you don't think he'll be like a 90-point player, I guess he's technically regressing a little bit. But he's going to be an interesting player just because he obviously has that contract year. And it's going to be interesting to see where they even place him in the lineup. Do they keep him on the top line with guys like Tuck and Skinner and move Tage down the lineup like we saw down the stretch? I think if they do that, I don't think Mittelstadt's going to regress. I think he's going to put up great numbers because I think he's great at a complimentary role there. But just from a production standpoint, how he ended the season, if he's not placed in a role that could leverage his offense, I think he could be a name that may regress from what we currently think of him. And then I'd say guys, that's the guy that I think will stay the same. I just want to go with Peyton Krebs here just because
that's fair.
He hasn't really had like a clear cut role yet at the NHL level. And he will have an opportunity to kind of be given that role next year. If you think he could crack into that top nine forwards, especially with that Quinn injury. But I think he's an easy bet to make for a guy that will kind of stick as a bottom six forward. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but I just think there's only so many forward spots to go around in the Sabres lineup that there's going to be some promising prospect that kind of gets pushed down the lineup a bit if they don't progress at the same rate as their teammates. And I think at this point, I think that could be Krebs.
Okay. All right. Well, I do want to say, just for the sake of saying it, I feel freaking awful for Jack Quinn, man. Like, he just seems like a really nice kid. He just seems like a good kid. And it's just to see something like that happen, it's just such a bummer. I mean, he's exceeded my expectations by a good bit. He's better defensively than he's given credit for. He had a really good season. I don't know. I just feel really bad for Jack Quinn. Hopefully the recovery is, you know, ahead of schedule. That's the best you can say, because it's going to be tough. I mean, any kind of Achilles injury is just, you feel for them, and just kind of the extension you need to have when it comes to skating. And it's a tough injury to come back from. And I really wish the best for him. The good thing, I guess, is he is young. You know, he can kind of recover a little bit quicker, maybe. And I know he's going to work really hard at it too, to come back, because hopefully the Sabres are really doing well. And the only thing he can kind of envision is him getting back in the lineup and producing the way we know he can. And I'm really looking forward to it. Before we get to the other question that we had, another good one. Does this injury to Jack Quinn save Olofsson's time at the Sabres? I've gone back and forth on it. I'm like, you know what? If you get a good offer, you have to get rid of him. But at the same time, like, there is a point where the Sabres shouldn't sell an expiring contract. Like, I'm one of those people, like, look, if the person's not resigning or you don't have room for him, get rid of him, get something back for him. But at the same time, like, if you really want to be a playoff team, sometimes you just kind of have to hold on to those players. Who knows what happens after the trade deadline? Last episode, I'm sitting here talking about, hey guys, remember, Sabres were fifth best in man games lost. This year might not be the same. We already found out, like, 2 days later, Jack freaking Quinn's out until mid-December, January, whatever it is. What happens after the trade deadline? You get rid of Olofsson. You're like, boom, got a third-round pick for him. Let's go. Next thing you know, another forward goes down. another couple forwards go down, and now you're looking for someone to fill that role, and you're like, holy crap, we just had him. Where do you kind of weigh that? Do you think Quinn going down kind of saved Olofsson, which is a terrible way of looking at it, but that's just the harsh reality of sports. Do you think if once Jack comes back and if he's looking good, do you try to sell him at the deadline, or do you keep a hold of him just because he does something that not a lot of players can do? He scores in bunches, man. And if he's feeling it and people are setting him up and teams are kind of sagging off him because Tage is on the other side of that power play, holy crap. What are your thoughts on that? And then we'll get to the other listener question that we have.
You know, I think the more time that passes, I really start to think that there could be a chance Olofsson is back next season.
Yeah.
I mean, they just really need those forward spots to be taken, and I doubt they're going to gift wrap a forward spot for a guy like Savoy or Kulik like they did with Paterka and Quinn, just because they're a year younger than Paterka and Quinn were when they cracked the Sabres roster. And then you probably think a guy like Rusek is going to make the Sabres full-time next year. But even then, you're still looking for an extra guy or two to fill out that forward depth. And if you lose Olofsson, then you're looking for an additional forward on top of that. So I think I'd say the more time that passes, the more I think Olofsson will return. Just 1 year left on that contract. I wonder what his value is around the league. He has a pretty sizable cap at over $4 million. He's obviously very good at scoring goals, but we've just seen like how low the value is on wingers on expiring contracts in the NHL. I mean, we saw Sam Reinhart, fantastic hockey player, one of the better defensive wingers in the NHL, helped lead the Panthers to a Stanley Cup Finals. He got traded for a late first-round pick, and Devin Levi, who was a goalie who picked in the seventh round, who had a good World Juniors, and that's kind of all we knew about him at the time he was traded. So he pretty much got traded for late first and kind of just a B-level prospect. And then you look at a guy like Pavel Buchnevich, he gets traded for like a second-round pick and a roster player. There's really just not much value for these guys, and especially a guy like Olofsson who really doesn't bring a complete game.
No.
And then you factor in his cap hit. I don't know if a trade will be there unless the Sabres try to force something. Like, I just can't see some team coming knocking down the Sabres' doors with like a second-round pick, first-round pick offer for Olofsson.
That's not happening. At least, I'm with you on that. That's just definitely not happening, especially with an expiring contract. I know the salary cap's supposed to go up next season, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Like, they're supposed to take that like big jump where, you know, guys are going to start getting paid a bit. That's why some people were a little surprised that more free agents weren't taking one-year deals so they could kind of re-enter and hopefully re-up and get some more money next offseason. But anyway, I don't know. I'm with you there. I think the trade offer you're going to get for Olofsson just won't be enough to justify trading away the goals that he could bring. I don't think he's going to be an every game player for the Sabres, especially in the beginning of the season when you have Savoy, maybe even Benson. Probably not Kulik. I think they're probably going to send him right to Rochester, but especially those guys that'll go back to the WHL, they might Shane Wright that thing. They might even Shane Wright that thing, at least for one of them, I would assume Savoy. They might Shane Wright that thing until he goes to World Juniors and then send him back after. Shane Wrighting as in holding him, you know, giving him a game here and there, stuff like that. I could see that happening too. I don't know. I was fully on the, trade Olofsson, especially, you know, when Quinn was. I personally believe that he's kind of like the Olofsson replacement, but just kind of more well-rounded, has the shot, but he can, you know, play defense and he's a better playmaker. But now that he's down, I don't know. And especially with what you're probably going to get for him, I think you probably need to keep a hold of him. I could probably see a scenario where like they really need a roster spot for another person that really impresses in camp, and then they try to force something there, but that's about it. So I think we need to prepare to see Victor Olofsson as a Sabre and probably maybe even walk for nothing next offseason, which at some point is going to have to happen. Like, people just need to realize, like, at some point the Sabres are going to get to a spot where you have to keep some guys that you know are going to walk, but you really need that depth. And especially if you want to make the playoffs, you need that depth for the playoffs too. I mean, like, guys are going to play through injuries, but some of these injuries, like broken sternum, hello, for Matthew Tkachuk, no thank you. there's going to be injuries that some guys can't play through, and you're going to need someone that isn't just like some random guy to fill in. Like, love you, Linus Weisbach, but I don't want you filling in on game five of the first round against Toronto or something. Like, why? No, you're going to want someone there that can fill the net, like Olofsson, or, you know, play a really brutal game and heavy game. Like, I don't know, like maybe a Greenway, even though he's not laying people out all the time, but you can't just call up anyone. I don't really know exactly where I'm going with this point, but I think people can kind of understand where I'm saying is sometimes you just need to bite the bullet and lose guys for free. And that's just the way it goes. And losing Olofsson for free is not going to be the worst thing ever. Now, if you lost other players, I don't really have one offhand, but if you lost a more significant player for free, yeah, I can understand that. But I don't know. I mean, what are you really going to get for him in a trade anyway? So the second listener question that we had, this one is from this guy, Tux. Let's say, hypothetically, no goalies come in from the outside, and Levi wins a starting job, which I think is pretty likely. Out of UPL and Comrie, who would make a better backup, and would either, neither, or both of them clear waivers? I'm going to let you take this one first. I have a feeling we're probably going to agree, but I'll let you take it. Again, the question is, hypothetically, no goalies come in, and Levi wins a starting job. Out of UPL and Comrie, who would make a better backup? And would either of them get claimed on waivers? Would neither? Would both of them get claimed? Or I guess technically pass through waivers is how it was asked, but you know what I'm saying. Walt.
You know, this one's a pretty tough one. It's one I've kind of been thinking about throughout this offseason. I think with a guy like UPL, you have to love his athletic profile, the fact that he's still a pretty young goalie. I mean, he's just got good potential just because of his age. And he's really shown some flashes, just making incredible saves at the NHL level. Just the consistency hasn't been there. Then you look at Comrie, he's a little bit older. He's been bouncing around NHL teams. But I think the interesting thing with Comrie is the fact that he was the best backup goalie in the NHL his last year in Winnipeg before the Sabres signed him. Like, he was incredible as the Jets' backup goalie. So I think you see, like, maybe is there more with Comrie, and you also think at the same time, maybe is there more with UPL. I do think UPL is a player who probably wouldn't clear waivers just because of his age. I think teams look at a guy like Gustafsson in Minnesota as an example of what a young goalie with kind of like middling numbers in the NHL level can do in the right opportunity. So I think a team would definitely pick UPL up for free if they could. I think a team would even trade for UPL if he is available. Comrie, with his cap hit, I believe it's like $1.8 million. I think he'd have a harder time having a team claim him. I think he could clear waivers. I mean, he has cleared waivers before. So it's just such a tough question. I mean, I guess you have to kind of use preseason and training camp to see which one wins that battle. And you even have that same question, like, will those three guys even be your three guys heading into training camp? I mean, there's still a lot of time left in this offseason. I could really see it going either way, honestly. I'd probably give a slight edge to UPL because of his age, but I do think both those guys will be competing for a backup job because I just think Devin Levi is that good. And I really think this organization has a ton of faith in him being the starter. I mean, that's what it sounds like from all their press conferences, unless you're just trying to throw out a smokescreen. But I think Levi is your main guy, and then your backup goalie. I can honestly see either one of those two.
Yeah. I mean, it really is a coin toss to me. I think when it comes to consistency, I think that's what you want with a backup goalie. Because you don't... Which, like, and I have to give that consistency thing to Comrie. Just because UPL is, it's just kind of like a coin toss which kind of goal you're going to get that game. And I don't know, like, I can't really think of too many games. And the Sabres are definitely in the idea of we need to improve our defense before we improve our goaltending. I think that's what they find as a bigger issue. They might find goaltending an issue 100%. I'm sure they do. I'm sure they're even calling around, checking around, doing all that. But I think they truly believe that defense is the bigger issue here, and if they improve the defense in front of these goalies, they will play better. That said, when it comes to UPL and him going cross-crease into the freaking corner to try to save a puck, I like, cool, you're super athletic, but it's used almost in an inefficient way to me. I am not a goalie expert at all, but that's just what I see from afar. And so I'm going to go with Comrie just because you kind of know what you're going to get from him a little bit more. Before he got injured, I believe, let me try to recount this. It was the game in Edmonton. He 100% stole that game.
Oh, yeah.
100%. And this is when the Sabres were injured and everything was going wrong. I think they, like, Owen Power got hurt, like, pregame or something like that, and they had to roll with 5D, and everyone was like, what's going on here? I don't know if that was the Edmonton game. I know it was out west, but I don't remember a game that UPL stole. I think there were a couple that he had a lot of high saves and stuff like that, but stole? I mean, for a backup goalie, you want consistency and the ability to steal a game, which you want that for every goalie, obviously. But if you can get that from your backup goalie, I mean, that's good. Now, if it's consistently awful, that's another thing. But I have more faith in Comrie. When it comes to waivers, I think Comrie passes through and UPL doesn't. So it kind of contradicts what I'm saying with how I see the league viewing those two goalies because of what you said. UPL is younger. There's a longer runway, and teams are looking for anyone. They're looking for their Aiden Hill. Yeah, he wasn't doing too well, but then got on a magical run, and here we are. They're looking for their Jordan Binnington. 2 years before, he was like, I'm not going to the ECHL. Next thing you know, he's lifting the Stanley Cup. They're looking, that, like, teams are desperate for this stuff. And so I think if they saw UPL go on waivers, they would claim him. And that's, I genuinely think that's why UPL will win the job, just because they realize, look, Comrie's a lot more likely to be able to stick around in this organization if we put him on waivers than UPL. But for me, I would, and it's a pretty close competition, but for me, I would think Comrie would be the better backup. He's done it before, and I just have more confidence in him and consistency, which it might not be consistently great. Certainly not. I mean, if he was consistently great, we wouldn't be having this conversation, but I just don't see it with UPL. And it's nothing against him as a person or anything like that. It's just, ever since that, like, one really good season in juniors, it's just kind of been lackluster, man. Like, you can blame the defenses in front of you all you want, and it's failed, especially for last year's Sabres team, excuse me. Maybe for some of those Amherst teams that he was on, but I don't know, man. It just hasn't clicked for me. The feeling you get when you watch Devon Levi versus UPL is completely different. You're like, oh, crap, yeah. With Levi. And then with UPL, you're like, oh, crap. Like, and he's a good goalie, but there's good goalies everywhere, man. Like, there are so many limited spots for goaltenders in the NHL. There's 64. You got 32 teams, and two teams need two goal, or every team needs two goalies. Two teams need two goalies, of course. Yeah, that's exactly how the NHL runs. But that's, am I off base with what I'm saying? Like, UPL would probably have a tougher time passing through waivers, like you said, but it's just the inconsistency that really is the issue. If you knew exactly what you're going to get from him from each game, I think that would be great. Do you try to ride those waves of, like, hey, if he's really feeling it, you know, give him a couple more games, rest Levi a bit, and then when he starts to falter, really just, you know, try to ride Levi, and then hopefully UPL kind of figures it out? Like, is that kind of how you see things? I have no idea where they're going to go with this one. Defense was a lot easier, even though there's more defensemen to choose from. It's just,
yeah,
I don't know.
I think the thing that interests me is kind of how they ended the season with UPL. They kept him up with the Sabres, and I don't even think he dressed some games instead of sending him down to Rochester. And I think that could either be both a good thing or a bad thing for his future. I guess it depends. I could see it being a good thing, the way that they really think adding a guy like Levi to the mix is really going to help motivate him and really, like, step up his game to a different level. Just because, like, having a guy like Devon Levi around in the locker room, like, that guy is, like, the definition of a hockey sicko. I mean, you see a guy, he goes to Northeastern, he's facing like 50, 60 shots a night some games. The end of his season, he pretty much had to win every game just for Northeastern to have a shot at the tournament. And then he comes to the NHL. I mean, they give this guy the NHL job where the Sabres pretty much have to win out. They're playing some pretty good teams. Just thinking back on that Rangers game and that shootout in Madison Square Garden, he's staring down Artemi Panarin, like the NHL's greatest shootout guy ever, and just absolutely makes him not even be able to get a shot off. And I think if you see a guy like Levi just with his preparation, with how he thinks the game, and if you think that could rub off on UPL a little bit, another semi-young goaltender, I could see the argument there why the Sabres would want to keep him around versus Comrie. But, I mean, like you said, with that consistency thing, I think that has to go to Comrie just because of what he's shown in Winnipeg that one year. He's just a solid NHL backup. You kind of know what you're going to get with him. And I think you can't even get flashes of greatness with him, too. I mean, that Edmonton game earlier on in the season, that had to be one of the best goalie performances I've ever seen from any Sabres goalie.
It was like the one where like Dustin Tokarski like shut out the Penguins when they had like 46 shots a couple years ago, and everyone was like, what just happened?
The Tokarski revenge game.
That's right. Tokarski, I mean, like, to be fair, like he came back to the Sabres organization. They obviously treated him pretty well. And so, I mean, like, he came back, and so, I mean, I don't know. Maybe you can get another couple of revenge games out there or something. I don't know. But, I mean, he's going to be in the AHL anyway. So, shout out to, you know, shout out to Malcolm Subban. Awesome dude. Great pipes. Oh, I mean, that was, dude, when he sang the national anthem, that was awesome.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. How could you forget about that?
I just remember him being, like, the backup goalie during that game where the guy threw, like, Magic the Gathering cards on the ice. So he's just looking down over the boards, and the cards are, like, spread out all over.
I was just about to mention that.
That's the one thing I always remember.
I was just about to ask. I was like, was he the guy who, like, almost got nailed by all those cards? Yeah. Oh, man. That was the greatest. That was the greatest highlight of that Sabre season. Anyway, and also shout out to Michael Hauser. It sounds like he's probably not going to be back. I don't know where. Did he sign elsewhere?
I think he did sign with Rochester.
Did he?
Yeah, so Rochester has, like, okay. I guess he'll probably be in Jacksonville, their new ECHL affiliate. But, yeah, they got.
Oh, they just announced that? Oh, man, I must have missed that. The Sabres have a new. So they got rid of Cincinnati as their affiliate. So Jacksonville.
Yeah, the Iceman.
Okay, the Jacksonville Iceman. All right, I like that. And so that'd be interesting. Like, you know how we always would be like, remember when Utica was Vancouver's farm team?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, we need a forward. It's like, all right, he'll be there in like 2 days. Like, oh, man, all right. Oh, you know, we'll take Jacksonville. It's not as close as Cincinnati, but, you know, some of the guys that get sent down, yeah, you're getting sent to the ECHL, but you're also going to the tropics during the winter, so good for you.
Yeah, I saw, like, Lake Tahoe apparently is getting an ECHL team, too, like, backed by Tim Tebow. I mean, if you get to be sent there, like, I can't imagine the AHL affiliate being better than Lake Tahoe. So you'd probably be a little happy when you get sent down to the ECHL.
Interesting. Yeah, the ECHL is an interesting – it's an interesting league.
Oh, it's a wild league.
It's – I know a couple guys that, like, had played in it, and, like – you play with them in a men's league, they tear it up. But then you go and you just, like, watch them against, like, their own level of competition, and you're just like, what's going on here? Like, it's just – it's interesting, man. I mean, like, to be the top one, like, 0.01% of hockey players that makes the NHL, you know who I played with as a kid who was the best of us by far? Andrew Podorowski.
Oh,
He's incredible in the AHL. He can't make the NHL. He was the best player I knew, like the best player. I knew other guys. I knew some guys that got drafted. I knew some other guys. I played with Nick DeSimone. I don't know if anyone even knows that name. He's a guy in the AHL. He went to Union College.
Flames legend.
Yeah. But, like, I mean, like, these guys aren't playing consistently in the NHL at all. Like, it is so freaking tough to play in the NHL. Like, it's just – so the guys that play in the ECHL, like, they're really good hockey players. They really are.
Yeah.
We need to sometime this offseason, Walt and I are going to rank every professional league in the world. And Walt just found out about this. And frankly, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about when I talk about other leagues. So he's going to have to do a lot of the legwork on this. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, I mean, like, where would you rank the ECHL? You probably go NHL, KHL, AHL, SHL, Liga in Finland, maybe the Swiss League.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I know, like, the NHL equivalency models are always, like, they really value, like, the Czech extra Liga for some reason. And I don't know if it's...
Yeah, that's a good point. This is a pretty decent league. I mean...
Yeah. I mean, there's some Rusek guys who made the jump from there, so...
Interesting. I've always wanted to,
like... Jager plays in that league, too, so...
That's right. Oh, Jager. Oh, man, he's going to be 65 years old and playing in, like, the... Bulgarian fourth division and just loving life. I look back at my hockey career and I was like, I should have cared more because like I could have been making a killing in that like French third league, dude. Like just absolutely running running the league. No, some of those low level league, like the English one, the one for like England, I think maybe Scotland or Ireland have a couple teams or something.
Yeah.
It's like it is all goons. It is all goons. If you punch people in the face, go play there. It's nuts, man. I wouldn't want to play that. Are you kidding me?
That Sean McMorrow guy, I'm pretty sure that like Sabres him, or he's like a Rochester Americans enforcer, and he played like one game, like one shift for the Sabres.
Dalton Smith's sure making a killing over there.
Oh yeah, what are you? About
you know what's Dalton Smith doing these days? Now we're just at the part of the episode where we don't have anything planned, so we're just gonna start talking. But he's playing for the. Wow, hold on a second here. He is 31 years old, and he plays for the Colorado Eagles. Last year, I don't know if he was injured last year, but he played 6 games for the Colorado Eagles of the AHL last season. He played 6 games and had 32 penalty minutes, 0 points, obviously. I don't know. I feel bad. I would never say that to his face. I would never be like, haha, you're not great at hockey. Like, I would never say that to your face. You kidding me? But I don't
know.
Yeah,
like, I mean, I was so happy when he got that NHL game for Dalton Smith himself, but
yeah,
like so angry at the Sabres front office at that time for thinking to beat Tampa.
Yeah.
All we need to do is call up a guy like Dalton Smith. We don't need better hockey players. We just need to be a little more physical and we could beat the Stanley Cup champions.
Yeah, it was tough. I've repressed those memories. I can't do it. Oh man, Dalton Smith. We're just gonna start pulling out names. Let's talk about some extensions. The Sabres coaching staff got an extension, not Granato, the assistant coaches, and then they brought in Nathan Paige and Vinny Prospel to the Rochester organization. For me, I'll just say those are really like that's awesome. Vinny Prospel, good hockey player. Seems like he just strikes me as one of those like veteran guys. It's just like you knew he was going to be a coach even when he was playing kind of thing. And then Nathan Paige, you 100% knew he was going to be a coach at some point. So I'm really happy about that. I'm not sure if you have any opinions, but my real question was, what are your opinions on bringing back the assistant coaches, usually the ones that run the power play, the penalty kill, things of that nature? What do you think of the Sabres bringing those guys back?
Yeah, well, I mean, first off, with those Rochester hires, I mean, I know Paige has been a skills development coach with the Sabres, and I mean, he was a leader down in Rochester to end his career as a player, so I think it's great to see him there. And Vinny Prospel, a Czech hockey player, so I mean, Jiří Kulik will have a countryman there, maybe Rusek if he ends up down there again, so that's pretty cool to see. And then with the Sabres assistant coaches... I know I'm a huge Matt Ellis fan just from a skills development standpoint. I think when you have just like pure hockey freaks, like guys like Owen Power, Devin Levi, are just kind of nerds of the game. I think having a guy like Matt Ellis around is perfect because he's a player who was never supposed to be in the NHL. He pretty much built his whole career around just developing his skills. And I know he worked really closely with Daryl Belfry, who's one of the top skill development coaches, and he's a guy who works very closely with Owen Power.
Mm-hmm.
So having a guy like Ellis on the coaching staff along with Girardi as a skill development guy, I think he's great to have. And in terms of the power play and penalty kill, I think the Sabres, especially on the penalty kill, I think they have some very interesting ideas with the penalty kill, just getting more aggressive. But power I don't kill. think they're Yeah, I just don't think they're ideas that you could implement overnight, especially with younger players. I think it's going to take some time for the power kill strategy to eventually work. Like, I don't know if they plan on ditching it next year, but it's a strategy where you really have to know when to take a risk, when to sit back. You really need to have that risk assessment baked into your game. And that's difficult for younger players just at a 5-on-5 level, and especially on the penalty kill. So I think that strategy could work in the future, but also if it's not working to start the season, you kind of start feeling the pressure of like maybe we should change things up a bit, because I think the goal of this upcoming season is a lot different than this past season. Like, this past season is kind of viewed as a mini miracle if the Sabres could somehow squeak into the playoffs. This upcoming season, it's viewed as an expectation. So I think just looking at the season from that standpoint, I think there may be a little more pressure on the assistant coaches and even the head coach this upcoming season. So it's going to be interesting to see how they take their approach in coaching versus development in just their tactics.
So I randomly decided to tweet today, like my prediction, again in the middle of July, the prediction for the Atlantic Division. And it turns out like I didn't even look, but apparently a few other people have kind of done that. And then past like 24 to 48 hours, I think Joe from Cautiously Optimistic podcast, which go listen to them. They are also part of the Charging Buffalo. I think he threw one out there, and I saw someone else. I can't remember exactly who it was, but I had a problem. I could not figure out. I personally, I believe Toronto is going to win the division, and then it's going to be Tampa. But then after that, I think it's going to be very close between Boston, Florida, and Buffalo. I can't put the until the Sabres actually do it, I can't put them in front of Boston. They just came off a historic season. I know they lost some people, but they just came off like an incredible season. I can't see them falling that far. And then with Florida, they just went to the Stanley Cup final. Like I can't, again, they just made it over the Sabres, but they just went to the Stanley Cup final. I mean, it's going to be real tough for me to think that they're just going to miss the playoffs. I can see it happening. I don't, my gut tells me that they won't. So I can't put the Sabres above them, at least in mine. So I have it going. Toronto, Tampa, then Florida, Boston, Buffalo, Ottawa, Detroit, Montreal. Do you agree with that? Again, this is middle of July, so we can be totally wrong. I expect to be totally wrong. But I don't, the expectation, and I believe Andrew, if I believe it's Andrew that mentioned something about like, hey, isn't this the year that people are supposed to progress? Or not people, excuse me, the Sabres are supposed to progress and make the playoffs and make that jump. It's like, yes, but who do they leapfrog then? Is it, I would put my money on Florida for them to leapfrog Florida. Excuse me, sounds like me trying to pronounce a last name, but it's like, where do you, where am I wrong? What am I doing wrong here? Like, what's your prediction? This will be the last thing we go over, just because we are, man, we're already over an hour already. But what do you think there? Again, the expectation should be and has to be playoffs this season. But that also means that they have to overtake someone, like, unless the Atlantic is going to take over both wild card spots, which, hey, maybe they could. I don't know. Maybe they do. But I wouldn't bank on it necessarily. So, like, who do they overtake? Is it Boston? Does Boston really fall that far after such an incredible regular season last season? Like, was that like their last hurrah? Do you think Florida, like, congratulations, you guys made it to the Stanley Cup Finals, but you barely squeaked in this year, and I think it's only going to get worse from here. Like, where are you at with that? Because I'm kind of lost, because I still expect the Sabres to make the playoffs, but I still have all these teams in front of them. Like, it's like a weird mental battle I've been going back and forth on.
I think, well, I mean, Toronto's going to Toronto in the regular season, so I feel like they're probably the front runners to win the division. Then I think you look at a team like Florida, they're probably my number two spot just because of their playoff run, and I think they played some very good hockey with some not so great luck during the regular season. And then I think they hope they could get a guy like Spencer Knight back this upcoming season. I know he returned to the ice, and I think he's a guy who's just kind of poised for a breakout year in net. And if they get that from him, I think they can even win the division next year.
Wow.
Then things start to get interesting with Boston. I think with Bergeron, I mean, he's the biggest question. I think you hear a lot of people talk about, oh, for the Sabres to make to the playoffs, they have to sign like Luke Shen or like some guy you forgot was in the NHL. But I mean, really, for the Sabres to make the playoffs, they really just have to hope Patrice Bergeron doesn't come back to the Bruins. That guy was absolutely unhinged last season with how much he dominated the game when he was on the ice. I think they had like their expected goal share was something in like the 60s. Their goal share was like high 60s, like 70% or something crazy like that. Like when he was on the ice, the Bruins scored a lot of goals and barely allowed any goals. Yeah. And when you have a force like that on the ice, like a guy that kind of plays the center position, like nobody has – not many players have played in recent times. You're going to be a very good hockey team. And if you lose that guy, it's going to sting a lot because he's pretty much irreplaceable.
Yeah.
So I think Boston, if Bergeron comes back, I think they'll be in that three spot. If he doesn't, I think they could fall behind the Sabres.
Wow.
And then you get the question with Tampa. I think with Tampa, star players are aging a little bit. I mean, Braden Point's obviously still in his prime, but you got guys like Hedman that's getting older. Stamkos is getting older. The depth pieces are drying up a bit. You're seeing them trade a ton of draft picks for guys that are barely in the NHL at the deadline just because they could hit people. And once you get there, you kind of know you're like exiting your prime. They're like the midlife crisis of a NHL team building right now. So I think they're on the way down. And then the teams right in the mix with the Sabres will probably be Detroit and Ottawa. And I think the question...
Ottawa has lapped the Sabres in their process. That was the greatest tweet ever. If anyone doesn't know what we're referring to, is some Sens fan basically saying, like, the Sens are way ahead of the Sabres in their retool or whatever the hell it is. And you're just like, what are you talking about? Like,
that guy, he started like backing up on Twitter after. I don't think he thought they would gain that much traction, but I don't think he knows Sabres Twitter.
No, you definitely don't know Sabres Twitter. If you talk about them at all, you're in trouble.
That turned into like a huge fight on Twitter afterwards, especially with like Red Wings and Senators fans. And after that DeBrincat trade, they're like, oh, which team is better, like the Sabres, Red Wings, or Senators? And I mean, I may be biased by going with the Senators. I mean, not the Sabres here. God,
how could you, Walt?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you look at a team like the Red Wings, they add to DeBrincat, but that team probably has like 12 like second, third line tweeners at forward to fill out like the rest of their forward group.
Yeah.
And then you're really banking on guys like Lucas Raymond making like a giant jump next year. They just don't really have that like transformational talent at forward. Like a guy like Tage Thompson has shown he could be for the Sabres. Then you're looking at an Ottawa team who they finished right below the Sabres last year. They're going to have a guy like Chychrun for a full season. They lose DeBrincat to Detroit, obviously. They're going to get Josh Norris back for a full season. But you look at like the help they have coming in through their prospect pool, they just don't have a lot. I mean, their second and third rate prospects would barely crack the Sabres' top 10 prospects. I mean, even their top prospect, Ridly Greig, I don't even know if he'd be top 6 Sabres prospect. And they did not have a pick until the fourth round this year. So I think Ottawa, they're definitely in the discussion for that Sabres, Red Wings, Senators mix this year. But in the future, I just think that's a team that's going to run out of gas really fast with just the lack of pieces they have in their system, not drafting that well, trading at losses for guys like DeBrincat, just getting 1 year out of him. And then a team like Detroit, they really remind me of a Sabres team if Tage Thompson did not turn into Tage Thompson. Because I think they'd be, if the Sabres didn't have Tage Thompson turn into this version of Tage, I think we'd really be hoping Cousins could be a number one guy, which he maybe could, but he probably won't. And you're kind of in that discussion of how will we add elite talent to this group. So it's going to be interesting this year. And I'm already looking forward to kind of like the fun, like heated rivalry between the Sabres, Red Wings, and Senators fans in this region of teams in the Atlantic. Cause I think those are the three teams who are really going to be pushing to overtake like the old core of Florida, Tampa, Boston, Toronto this season. And I think it's going to be a very fun hockey season in this division.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it for sure. And I don't know. I mean, like everyone just kind of, I shouldn't say everyone, but I definitely predicted this. Boston was going to fall off last year.
Yeah,
they just casually go win the President's Trophy. So that's fun. The year, got to go back, you know, a couple seasons now. Now that we're on season four, when I was like, you know what, I think this is the year Tage really does it, and then he doesn't. And so the next summer, I'm just like, I don't think Tage has it, and then he does, and then he turns into the Tage of now, and I'm like, okay, what the hell is going on here? So any kind of prediction I make, just whatever the opposite is, the opposite result is probably going to happen. So
yeah, I remember I tweeted out like when Josh Allen during that lockdown year is having like those crazy performances. I was like, Josh Allen's transformation is like if Tage Thompson centered in Nikita Kucherov.
Yeah, that's right.
And I had no idea that that would actually happen.
Yeah.
So
hey, it happened for the best, and couldn't happen to a nicer guy, regardless of what Patrick Berglund says about him. So I think that's where we'll end it. Obviously, appreciate anyone that's listened over the past couple seasons here and continues to. We love making these. Really enjoy doing these with Walt. I think that's about it for us. As always, Walt has the last word, so what do you got?
I was actually looking at comments on our podcast today because Anthony from Expected Buffalo, someone commented about like some word he was saying a lot. And then I found out that apparently I say I mean a lot. Like there's two of our three comments are about me saying I mean a lot.
Really?
So
well, it's probably
if you're listening to this one, keep a counter the next episode of how many times I say I mean. It'll be, gotcha. Be interesting to see that statistic.
I'm gonna say luckily I haven't looked in the comments because they're like, this guy can't pronounce a name, what's going on here? So no, I haven't seen those comments. I'm not exactly sure if I necessarily want to check them out. People can be a little ruthless, but whether you're listening to commenting and crap all over us or you're listening just because you like to talk about or like to hear about the Sabres, we appreciate it. And we'll catch you on the next one.